I'm walking in the direction of Croke Park. Hundreds of thousands of you every year take this walk in your county colours to the home of GAA. And you walk across the top of Mountjoy Square, past the houses, and invariably you miss a house, number 3. It's now the Dublin Adult Learning Centre. Previously, 100 years ago, it was at the centre of the decade of change in this country, the decade of the formation of this state. Every name that we think of in our history lessons, from De Valera to Collins to Arthur Griffith, all worked and hid in this house.
Yes, it was only after Michael Collins was shot, wasn't it, that it all went haywire. That was a terrible shame because all the women adored Michael Collins, apparently. He was very handsome, apparently.
It took me a year to get to the steps outside. And when I did get in, I sat at the door and saw all the faces, and all I wanted to do was just run.
As we go in, we're going to meet Mary Marr, who's in charge of it today, and we're going to meet Simon Walker, whose grandfather, Walter Cole, lived in this house and was pivotal to all those great events in this house.
Arches have the wrong key.
Well, this would have been their basement.
This would have been the escape route.
And is this why the house became so important in terms of the doll sitting here? And
the first doll was banned by the British government and became an underground parliament.
Down to my grandfather and Arthur Griffiths, you know. And it
was because Walter Cole had founded Sinn Féin along with Arthur Griffith, and Arthur Griffith practically lived here in number 3, the first doll met several times in the house.
And the large dining room on the first floor could accommodate everybody in the doll, you know, and that was key to it, you know.
Everybody?
Everybody, yeah. They would all come. About 40 of them, maybe, around that big figure.
Standing in the hall of number 3, Mountjoy Square, you're in a 3D book of Irish history. Look up, and on the ceilings you can see the elaborate stucco work from the original wealthy Georgian owners of over 200 years ago. To your right, inside the door, the reception desk of today, welcoming students who missed out in an overcrowded education system.
Are you okay?
Not too bad. Still a bit.
On the wall opposite the reception desk, there's a picture of number 3's last private owner, Walter Cole, for whom this was not only a family home, but also a safe house, a meeting place, and an arms store.
Old King Cole, as they used to call him, because, you know, he was well into his 50s and a good friend of Arthur Griffith's. His father was born in Dublin and went to Liverpool to work on the railways. Walter was very much interested in Irish culture in Liverpool and was a member of the Liverpool Irish Society, and he went to art college there. So it was a short hop, so to speak, to come back to Dublin, which he did in the 1880s, and he kind of thought he would never be a great painter, so he went into business and opened a fruit stall in the market, which is still going to this day. He married my grandmother. He was 60 and she was 20.
And also, remarkably, one of the children born in this house, Pauline, is still alive.
Yeah, she's well into her 80s at this point.
Well, there was just lovely furniture and lovely, lovely silver and the thing I still love, porcelain, and lovely china and all that kind of thing. And it was all part of that sort of scene. But a thing I always remember about Mountjoy Square, there was chandeliers somewhere, and I used to have great fun. They had to take these little glass things separately, and we had great fun looking through them because it made the stairs. That's another thing I have to tell you about beautiful Georgian stairs. They made the stairs like one, however way you look through the glass, and I can remember enjoying doing that. I'll show you, I have these little photographs here. That'll tell you how old I am. That was our nurse. And look at the outfit.
Yeah, straight out of Downton Abbey, isn't it?
Absolutely, yes. Now, there's Papa, see? And then me, look at me. He thought the sun, moon and stars shone out of me. That's what I was always told.
And what did he call you?
He called me Paul. He didn't call me Pauline. He used to call me Paul.
Paul?
Yeah.
Did you have staff in the house?
Oh, we did, yes. You know, maids and that. In those days, you just did, yeah.
And how would you be called for dinner? And how is there, was there...
No, there weren't any of that. That had gone by the time I was around, really. We just had a cook and a maid and whoever was cook.
And what, she'd shout, your dinner's ready? Or
No, I don't think she would have shouted. Nobody
Pauline,
shouted.
Your dinner's ready.
Nobody shouted in those days.
And where would they live in the house?
I suppose they lived downstairs. Like, I can't remember. You see, you didn't sort of see them much or anything. No, I'd never been downstairs. Never.
To the basement here of the Adult Learning Centre. This is where the canteen is, and this is where students come when they want to experience what's known as taster classes, because the whole idea here is of welcoming people into the learning centre and encouraging them to actually participate in education once again.
I found out I was actually coming for the first day, but I remember going to Mass, 8 o'clock Mass that morning, because I was dreading meeting the lady that was to teach me. I was praying that she'd be all right, that she wasn't going to be an anarchy woman, you know what I mean? And it turned out she was a very nice person and that I would learn to read and write. And the first two books I read so far, the first one being John F. Kennedy and the other is President Mandela. The opposite. One had the wealth and the other struggled for it. But it was a great, two great stories.
Were they the first two books you ever read?
They were the first two books I ever read. I never read comics or anything like that growing up as a child. So they were the first two books.
And you learned to read here, number three. But what, can I ask, what age are you, Michael?
I'm 61.
So you were 61 when you read your first book?
61 when I read my first book.
So we're coming out of the basement. This is the basement where Polly, I presume your mother was the same, Simon.
Yes.
Polly was never in when she was a child, no. Because it was Downton Abbey. This is the kitchens downstairs.
Which way was you?
I have to have What's interesting too is that this hallway, like you can see the width of it, which is, you know, probably Mountjoy Square is probably some of the widest scale buildings.
To the left would have been the study, Papa's study, and then the dining room. And then on the other side, where that desky thing is, there was a lift.
That desky thing is called reception.
Beg your pardon. The reception.
That's how big it is.
The beautiful reception area that they now have.
This would have been really treated as a room, because remember in those days, it was all about how much heat you could get.
And I can remember them playing cards. They used to have parties and things. And I can remember them playing cards in the hall.
I have photos of 12 or 15 people in the hallway, some of them sitting on the stairs, and they're all playing cards, and they've all got blankets over their knees. But they're in the hall. Yeah. They're not in the good rooms. And that's maybe a particularly kind of an Irish way to use a house like this too, isn't it? That, you know, that this kind of informality.
And who would those 12 or 15 people have been?
Well, they would have probably certainly been Sinn Féiners and maybe a few from the markets as well.
The heavy hall door is a big brass plaque saying Dublin Adult Learning Centre and is painted a cheery sunflower yellow, welcoming. Back in Walter's day, that front door wasn't so welcoming to everyone.
The house was raided constantly by the police, who at one stage cut a hole in the front door. There's a story about it having to be repainted 7 times within the space of a year from the police attacking it with, or the military as they were known, attacking it with hatchets and rifle butts. They were rounded up too, and Walter spent 6 separate spells in prison in England.
The hall of number 3 Mountjoy Square is full of posters and leaflets. They're about adult learning and talks and events taking place in the house. Just to the left as you go in the front door is another doorway leading onto a short corridor.
And I think this was kind of Walter's like little sitting room. And we have it as three offices, but it was one big room.
Pauline remembers that doorway. She was a child in the 1930s when her father, Walter Cole, was in his 60s. The doorway was into his sitting room, and one day she recalls taking a deep breath before going in.
It was an ad in a paper. It was a summer dress. It wasn't a sort of party dress or anything fancy like that. I just fancied that I thought it was lovely. Anyway, I remember getting up my courage to ask if I could have the dress.
And who did you ask?
Papa, yeah.
Did Papa ever say no to Paul?
I don't remember him saying no. But I don't remember asking for much either.
Well, tell me about getting up the courage to go in and ask him about this blue flower.
Yes, because he would be in his little studies. He was on the left of the hall where you go in those days. He would have been sitting at his desk, and he always had lovely, you know, those chains with a watch or something, fobs, is that what you call those? And I think he wore Dickie Boo tie things. Anyway, I got up my courage and asked him, and he always gave me lovely hugs. You know, he was huggy. He wasn't sort of a distant father. He was very nice and warm and kind man. And I think kindness is one of the greatest virtues in life, isn't it, really? And anyway, of course, I got the dress, and I thought I was just divine in the dress. And it was blue, flowery. It was a flowery dress.
Did he say yes right away?
Of course he did. Absolutely. Gave me a hug.
And that room there, which we can have a quick
Papa,
look in.
Walter Cole's sitting room had a connecting door to another larger room.
The drawing room. It's a classroom. We're just showing
chair. C-H-A-I-O.
Chair. C-H-A-I-O. No?
Day. D-A-Y.
You have it.
We have that.
Day.
Yeah.
Day.
So it's an adult literacy centre. We cater for adults who have problems reading and writing, and we offer tuition from one-to-one individual tuition for people who cannot read or write at all to a FETAC level 5.
It took me a year to get to the steps outside. And when I did get in, I sat at the door and saw all the faces, and all I want to do was just run. And you just pace for it, and then eventually you'll say to yourself, hang on, we're all in the one boat. And you meet lots of friends and lots of people.
And it's pretty nice and friendly and all, and very helpful. And the tutors and all the students and all as well, it's very helpful as well.
What does number 3 mean to you?
It's a great place to come to, great for education. I came back here 4 years ago. And I'm working at the moment. I'm going to get a job out and doing modules for the care of the older person. And only for this school, I wouldn't be where I am at the moment.
And what was it like walking up those steps there?
Frightening. But when you watch it in the door, very warm, welcome. And actually, the people in here, they're all very good. They're all in the same boat as you. They all help you. They want to do things, make things better for themselves and for their children. And that's right. Now I have 6 children, so I couldn't do any homework with my children, so I'm a bit happy that they're teenagers now, but I have grandchildren, and I can read stories for them now and stuff like that.
We're on a journey now through an old Georgian house on Mountjoy Square, Dublin, number 3. It's a journey through a house, but also a trip through Irish history. Our guides are Mary Marr, who runs the Dublin Adult Learning Centre, which uses the house now. Also, Pauline Cole O'Kennedy, daughter of the man who used to own the house, fruit merchant, Republican leader, Walter Cole. Walter's grandson, Simon Walker, is also taking me through the house. He's a keeper of Walter's family archive. And we're climbing the grand staircase from the entrance hall.
A thing I always remember about Mountjoy Square was how lovely it was to walk up the stairs, because you glide, you didn't walk up. You know, normal stairs you have to climb up. You know, there's a saying, you climb up the stairs. Well, you don't do that in those George's houses. You kind of glide. They're beautiful, the stairs.
That's called, you know what that's called? Someone else said it to me recently.
Really?
It's called the going of the stairs.
Well, there.
And the going of the stairs in Georgian houses were specifically made to... For the glide up, yeah. They're brilliantly proportioned.
Well, they were beautiful.
You would have even felt it coming up the stairs there. It makes it really easy to climb stairs because they're at the exact level of the footfall.
Yeah, an optimum pitch of 31 degrees.
What do you do in real life, Simon?
I'm an architect.
Oh, funnily enough, Like, but that is called the going up the stairs.
It is, yeah.
Because they're lovely here.
At the top of that stairs, there was this old beaded curtain, we used to call it. It was, instead of sort of doors, I suppose, it was like old-fashioned kind of beaded. It was very old-fashioned-y. It was almost like a sort of what you'd imagine a fortune teller's place is like. But anyway, off that was this loungy place.
It's a library now. It's our resource room that the tutors and students source all the books. And then we have little rooms off it, and they're little tuition rooms for students and tutors who work in one-to-ones.
And at the back of that was this little, what we used to call the breakfast room. But it was really our dining room in those days, because the dining room was huge and we didn't use that really, only on special occasions really. You see, it was wartime when I was mostly there. And I can remember my grandmother with the glimmer man. She was always being caught making cups of tea with the glimmer man.
And he'd knock on the door and run in and see if had the gas cooker been on.
Again, this room, lovely fireplace. So obviously this was one big room that's been subdivided in three.
On the fourth floor, the school has offices looking out onto Mountjoy Square.
This is our ESOL office. We teach English to speakers of other languages.
Walter and the Sinn Féin guests were using the house while breaking the mould of Irish politics. But according to Simon, these 200-year-old Georgian houses, like number three, also broke the mould.
You see how large the windows are?
Yeah.
I mean, they're nearly 14 feet high, I would say. And people don't understand this about these Georgian buildings, but when you look at the front walls of the square, they're load-bearing walls, because the floor joists are bearing onto them. So the windows are as large as they can possibly be, and that's the principle. In other words, it's only the amount of masonry that's left, the brickwork that's left, is the absolute minimum that's required to hold the building up. Essentially, it's a modernist idea, which maybe people would be surprised by, that actually these buildings were striving for something quite radical in their day, which was the maximising of the amount of window that they could get. And even today, I mean, if you propose that window, I mean, in my practice, if you propose that window to a client, they'd be shocked at the size of the thing, you know.
Did you have a playroom in the house?
No, we really played in the ballroom, because there was a very big long couch on the far side. When you went into the ballroom, on the far side, there was a big long couch, and it was all full of our toys, dolls and, you know, fluffy animal-y toys. I remember them being all along that couch and skating.
So you skate in the ballroom of this house, you could skate? It was so big.
Yeah.
What's your memory
of that?
We
weren't meant to, of course, but we did.
And what would you be doing, skating up and down?
Yeah. You know, roller skates. That was the only skates there were in those days.
The room was so big, it could give you a spin.
Oh, yeah, it was a ballroom, Joe. I mean, it was big.
Well, now it's a classroom.
Yeah.
Okay, one more. Flip.
Flop.
Flip. Flip.
Flip. So the first two letters in boat. F-L. Perfect, Justin. Flip. Flop. Anybody want to try and spell it?
Oh, wow.
Perfect.
Will we use that sentence, Mark? You wear flip-flops in the summer. Perfect. Okay. You wear flip-flops in the summer. But what wear are we going to use? Close. Very close. W-E-A-R. Perfect.
There's a couple of ironies here. One is that Pauline's playroom, the ballroom, is now used for learning, whereas Pauline had to leave home to learn to the Dominicans in Wicklow at an incredibly young age.
I was sent to boarding school when I was 6.
The other sad irony is that while the adult students in the ballroom seemed to be enjoying themselves in number 3, Pauline's own schooling wasn't so happy.
I hated it too, which wasn't to help. But I made my first Holy Communion in Wicklow, and I remember my father and grandmother coming down for that. Because my mother had gone off to Japan. One of her sisters was getting married, and she went off to Japan. So that was really why we were sent to boarding school.
And did your mother ever come back from Japan?
Oh, she did. After about a year, though, she took a long time to stay in Japan. She loved travelling, and you see, she was so much younger than my father that he was awfully good to her, obviously let her, spoiled her rotten, let her do whatever she wanted to do. So, but we were still sent off to boarding school. I suppose the house seemed better without us or something.
We're on the second floor, yeah.
It's the second floor. And this would have been the bedroom area. And the ceilings are lower, the rooms are smaller. Again, we have a computer room and a classroom. Yeah. And this was the room that was kept for Arthur Griffith, because it was a curfew. And again, the location was ideal. When he couldn't get out to Howth, he used to stay here.
Yeah. When Griffith and Dev were both staying here, Arthur Griffith would polish his own boots, but Dev would leave them outside the door.
Were there stories of the fact that Michael Collins, Arthur Griffith stayed there quite a lot?
There were stories of Michael Collins because he was very handsome, apparently. And the ladies used to talk about him. And I think I met Kitty Kiernan at one stage. And I can remember a lot of talk about all that time.
Do you know where he stayed in your house?
He must have stayed in Arthur Griffith's room, because that would have been the room where they was marked out for those sort of people to stay in, maybe. I honestly don't know.
And where
that.
Did Kitty Kiernan stay, Paul?
That's another question. I don't know. But she apparently didn't accept him for a while.
Was he a bit of a rogue, I wonder?
I suppose he was. Sure, all men are rogues, Joe, aren't they? At some stage of their lives. Oh, dear.
The next floor, as you go higher, the rooms get a bit smaller.
And there's a photograph of Michael Collins on the wall again. Is that just studying him generally, Mary, or because of the house?
Well, our students love history.
There was a talk on Muhammad Ali now last night, and a great hero of mine. And I've been to history classes, local history, ancient history. I got thrown out of education when I was 9. I had a row with a priest, and I just said, I'm not listening to this nonsense, so he threw me out. I swear to God, what I said, just said, I can't believe in the devil. And you'll burn, and you'll do this. Oh, I thought, this is horrible. And I just said, I couldn't take it. I was frightened. I could see all the little girls. The little girls was what happened. The shoulders were going up. And the body language. And I looked and I thought, everyone's frightened. And I was brought up with the love of God, not a fear of God. And I said, you can't have a good God. You'd make a devil. And then he said, who are you? And I said, I'm Terry Smith. He said, stand up. So I stood up. And then he said, get out of the class. So I said, I'm glad to get out of the class. And that was it, really. And once you fell out with a priest, then you fell out with everyone. My whole family did, so none of us could read and write properly. But I, after years and years then, I broke the ice in Liverpool and then came here, and I've never looked back. And it's a whole new world opening up. From the bottom of my heart it is, and you can see it in the people's faces. It's wonderful.
Go up to the top of the house. And they were the girls' bedrooms. When Pauline lived here, that was her bedroom.
I can remember that very well, my little bedroom. It had the house that Jack built in a little frieze all the way around. Snow white bedroom furniture. That would have been Regency. And those masses of that, because Mummy had about one, two, three wardrobe sort of things. And then in the middle of that was a sort of dressing table and mirrors and stuff. But my bedroom had it, and washstands. You know, in those days you had marble-topped little washstands.
It's a fairly battered photograph. And there's Walter, Griffith and Dev in the front row.
Oh, yeah.
And that's Michael Collins there.
That's on the roof.
That's the roof, yeah.
And where's the escape route now that Arthur Griffith and Collins and Dev would have clambered up?
It must have been there.
Oh, I see it, yeah.
There's a Velux window there, but it was a roof light that you could just push out and you could escape out that route.
And then they would have got up into that valley.
Into the valley.
Anyone basically could have handled it.
Yeah.
Could have won. That climb was easy, and then you were onto a flat roof, effectively.
Yeah.
Eventually, the hostilities ceased and a treaty was on the table. Walter, like everyone else in his position, had to make a choice. He chose to oppose Dev and go in favour of the treaty.
You know, after things settled down, after the, you know, during the years of the Free State government, he continued to advise them. He was on a Senate advisory committee on forestry and the rest of it. But he died then in 1943.
He had a heart attack. It was terribly upsetting because, you see, he died terribly suddenly. And I can remember the hush in the house that something awful had happened, you know. And then the next morning we were told. And
where were you when he died?
I was actually at home. It was the Easter holidays, yeah. But I do remember my sister on the stairs outside the bedrooms crying. And I remember joining her.
So what age were you then, Pauline?
I was 10. I was literally on the stairs, just sitting. We must have been told. Perhaps we were on the way to bed or something. And that's what I remember. And that's as vivid as if it were yesterday to me. I can still see Mum sitting there. You know, it's extraordinary how vivid that is.
And then the kerfuffle, because it was a big funeral.
Yes, in Gardiner Street. You know that nice Jesuit church there? It's just around the corner from Mountjoy Square. And that I do remember, the hush. And everybody said, Dev is here. I can remember it was like a whisper that went around. Because he wasn't really expected to go.
What was the house like after the funeral?
It was terribly dreary, terribly sad, and terribly, empty, obviously. It was just a different place, really. And then, you see, we were packed off back to school again. And I remember being very upset, really, when I went back to school. But
because you would have been on your own as such.
Yeah.
Some years after Walter's death, his young widow, Maura, sold the house to an order of nuns according to his wishes. Before she finally left the house, Maura sent for her daughters, Dorothy and Pauline.
My mother asked us to come up from Wicklow, from school, to choose something that we'd like from the house. I chose this hideous little sort of the best way I can describe it was a little China girl holding balloons. Now, can you imagine, out of all the wonderful things that were in Mountjoy Square, that was the thing I thought I'd love as a sort of memento. So that'll tell you the age I was, really, at that stage. I suppose when I came up to choose them, it would have been before we'd left, because we didn't leave till I was about 14. But then the whole area got so tenementy, and it was dreadful in the end of our days there. The tenements were so filthy. And I can remember the dirty curtains, you know, they were kind of grey, where they had been white at some stage, and dusty, nasty looking. No, it wasn't nice, really.
This is where you need your oxygen tent, or as we call it, the gods.
Number three was a home and is now a school. Like a home, the school has a rhythm to its year. The taster students come in the summertime. The regular students come in the autumn. And at the beginning of June, well, we all know what happens in a school at the beginning of June.
I've just done my leaving cert, English. I found it okay. Very prepared. The tutor here, Angie, prepared us a lot for it, so... Today was the comprehension part, so it was essay writing and then answering questions on the text they gave you to read. So, but we'd done so much practicing and preparation for it that it was quite easy.
Hi, how are you? How's it going? How did you get on?
Terrified.
Did you finish all the sections?
I didn't know all the sections.
How many sections did you do?
I finished three of the main ones.
Brilliant.
And bits of the other ones.
Oh, brilliant. Well, that's good.
I'd say I might just about pass, but I didn't do as good as I thought I'd do. And I done the three sections I was supposed to do, but after that I just panicked. After that I just lost it. I don't know what I done.
It's not like being back at school, like we done a relaxation beforehand. It helped us focus, you know, totally relax. Basically, as she said, close your eyes, think of the paperwork, focus, the answers, everything, just everything. I felt, I'm over the moon now.
And what would Papa think now of the house being such an important educational institution?
Well, he'd be delighted. He really would be delighted now. He honestly, Joe, he'd be absolutely thrilled to bits about that, yep. You know, to think that he was so talented in his art, then he ended up in the market, which was, you know, so different from anything he would have wanted. And he was a great reader, because he was a great intellect, really.
So Pauline left number three, Mountjoy Square, when she was 14. She didn't see inside the house again until a few months ago.
Almost 70 years.
When she was invited back by the Adult Learning Centre.
My instinct when I went in was that the whole house seemed much smaller. And then what I did discover, that all the back part of it, sort of kitchen and breakfast room, that area, that was totally different. You see, when I remember it as being wide like this, but it was all so narrow.
I sort of remembered nothing from school. You know I was in school, but you wouldn't remember a poem or a book you read in school. You would just... But now, you just appreciated every book you were handed and looked forward to reading it, you know, as an adult going back to school. Maya Angelou was just one of my... It was a very sad book. I Know Why the Cage Bird Sings, brilliant book. And Denise Levertov, What Were They Like? It was about the Vietnam War. It's absolutely outstanding. The Road Not Taken as well, that was another poem, which was very good. Which path do you take in life, sort of, you know? That was another very good one.
Number three, Mountjoy Square, it oozes stories. The next time you're in your county jersey and heading across the top of the square to Croke Park, stop a moment outside. Look up at the roof and imagine the first TDs, Eamon de Valera and Michael Collins, Arthur Griffith, clambering out a skylight as the police charge the front door. Look at the first floor and recall Pauline and her sister roller skating in the ballroom. And finally, look down into the basement, where the new students calm their nerves over a cup of tea. Many of them haven't been in a classroom in over five decades.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.